The election results didn't just reshuffle the Congress. They also got people debating the meaning of labels used to map out the political spectrum. Our linguist Jeff Nunberg has been thinking about what's in a label.
If you ever find yourself desperate for a conversation starter, you might drop the observation that the word label is related to lap, which was originally a piece of cloth that hangs down at the bottom of a garment. A little part of that meaning survives in the way we talk about political labels, with the implication that they're merely tags tacked on to things for convenience. We don't ordinarily say that duck is a label for a kind of waterfowl. Duck is just a name. Whereas calling a word a label implies that it distorts or oversimplifies the category it's attached to. You hear people say, "I don't believe in labels," but nobody ever says, "I don't believe in names." Even so, we can't help imputing a reality to labels. Putting the Porsche name on a pair of sunglasses can invest them with the same panache we associate with the cars, even if we know perfectly well that the two have nothing in common. That's the principle that leads everybody to claim a political label when it's riding high in the saddle. At the heyday of liberalism in the 1950s and 1960s, everybody was happy to wear the label, from Stevenson to Eisenhower to the Dixiecrats. And nobody was too interested in debating its essence. As the critic Lionel Trilling wrote, liberalism was merely a tendency, not a body of doctrine. That began to change in the 70s and 80s, as a combination of liberal missteps and conservative attacks drove the liberal label from center stage. Politicians who would once have proudly owned up to the label began to flee from it. Old tribal differences no longer seemed important. People stopped distinguishing between progressive liberals, moderate liberals, practical liberals, northern liberals, traditional liberals, and New Deal liberals. Now the label was reduced to a small band of diehards clinging to the edges of the political continent. Since then, of course, it's the conservative label that has swollen to contain multitudes, particularly as the ideological poles were redefined to add social issues that nobody had much cared about when the liberal-conservative opposition first emerged in the New Deal era. A recent Harris poll showed that Americans are much more likely to identify people as being liberal or conservative according to their views on abortion or gay rights than on whether they want to cut taxes. That's why the media invariably describe anti-abortion or pro-gun Democrats like James Webb, John Tester, or Bob Casey as conservatives, even if they actually campaigned on the kind of economic populism that defined liberalism 50 years ago. In fact, the label social liberal is regarded as almost a redundancy these days, as if it went without saying. 15 or 20 years ago, the phrase was as frequent as social conservative in the media. Now it's outnumbered by social conservative by almost 20-1. The mark of a successful label is that we feel the need to make distinctions and qualifications among the many groups that are laying claim to it. Nowadays, it's the conservative label that attracts a clutch of modifiers: social, economic, small government, fiscal, libertarian, traditional, neo, and paleo. But the big tent conservative label began to fray as the administration's poll ratings declined precipitously. And since the elections, it appears to be coming apart at the seams. True, everybody on the right wants to claim that the voters didn't repudiate true conservatism. The Republicans would still be in power if they'd only been faithful to core conservative principles. But each constituency has a different idea of what those core principles are and how they were betrayed. For James Dobson of Focus on the Family, the Republicans' downfall was their failure to do more to preserve moral values. For Dick Armey, it was their refusal to hold the line on spending. And for William F. Buckley, it was a failed Iraq adventure that signaled the absence of an effective conservative ideology, as he put it. Whenever you hear somebody talking about true conservatism or genuine liberalism, you can be sure the argument has more to do with labels than ideas. There's a fear on the right that the voters' dissatisfaction with Republicans may translate into disenchantment with a conservative label itself, just as the liberal label was tarnished by its association with Vietnam and the civil rights backlash. The immediate reaction is for each of the conservative constituencies to claim the right to sole use of the label and discredit all the pretenders who've been wearing it improperly. In the next election, it's a safe bet that people who call themselves conservatives will be doing a lot more explaining and qualifying than they did the last time around. True, the conservative label is still a very long ways from disintegrating the way the liberal label did after Vietnam. The right doesn't really have to worry seriously until Republicans start saying things like, I don't believe in labels, always a sign that a label's becoming more of an inconvenience than a convenience. The beauty of a label is that it smooths over the corrugations of the world to create an impression of common purpose. But that's also why it can become an embarrassment when it comes to apportioning blame. At that point, people are just as happy to drop it in somebody else's lap.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist who teaches at the School of Information at the University of California at Berkeley.